Greetings and welcome to Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And dude, I am so excited for this week. I'm so excited for this week because this was one of my picks. This is one of my favorite bands. So it's a, this week was a labor of love. There's just no other way of putting it. We're talking today about the band XTC.
And I can see why you like it.
Yeah, that's a, it definitely fits in everything you know about me as far as something that I would like. Very Joe Jackson, very Elvis Costello. Like they all kind of fit into that same group.
And I'm not saying I hated this week. I actually went into this week very nervous. Mm-hmm. And when it was all said and done, I actually found myself enjoying this. But the whole time I'm doing any listening, all I can think of is how this is so in your pocket.
Yeah. And I think you kind of went into this with the trepidation of Dear God, right? Because mm-hmm. their biggest, probably one of their most well-known songs. And it's very controversial and it's very anti-religion. And it's, it can be offensive to some people. I'm not saying it's offensive to you or not, but I'm just saying that some people could find that topic or the way they present it offensive. And to be known for a song like that is a very difficult hurdle for people to get over.
Well, also, it wasn't that I was worried in so much of topics. What I was worried about is everyone kept saying, this song is very different from what they normally do. This song is very different than what they normally do. So I was thinking I was going to be stepping into some kind of atonal weirdness.
Oh, like, I got you.
Like the wackiness of the Flaming Lips on their more wacky stuff. And so
Yeah.
I was expecting,
so you didn't know which direction the other direction that the rest of their music goes into.
So I was expecting to step into this quagmire of atonality and arrhythmia. And what it turned into was something that was far more palatable and far more poppy than I was expecting. So, two albums in, I'm like, okay, so where's the weirdness? Mm-hmm. And it never really came about. And so, I came out really kind of enjoying it because I was expecting to have this cacophonous weirdness hit me all week. And it wasn't that at all.
Cool. Good. Well, then I'm glad. I'm glad it wasn't what you expected. They're really such a well-evolved band. You listen to their early stuff and then you make it all the way to the end, the more recent stuff. Shouldn't say the end because I'm always hoping there's going to be more XTC, and you just watch how this band evolves from like this very punk, new wave, angry band, and then turns into a very polished, trippy, psychedelic rock influenced orchestra pop group. And it's a really cool evolution.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Almost with every album, a reinventing of their sound. Let's get into this. XTC is an English rock band formed in 1972, led by vocalist Andy Partridge and Colin Moulding. In a short time, the band, which formed under the name Star Park, changed their name to Helium Kids and finally landed on XTC. And it was mainly for how it appeared in print. Soon after, John Peel saw the band at Ronnie Scott's club. He invited them to perform on BBC Radio, and Partridge credits him for them getting a record contract. In 1977, they released an EP called 3D EP. They followed that the next year, 1978, with their first debut full album, White Music. This album was recorded in 2 weeks. Partridge described it as Captain Beefheart meets the Archies. And the songs were built around his wordplay. Like all the way from that beginning album, you see the really clever craftiness of Andy Partridge's lyric writing. It never just means what you think it means on the surface, which I really, really love. Gives a lot of repeat listenability. The album reached number 38 on the UK charts, and none of the singles charted. This Is Pop, Statue of Liberty, those were both singles, but Statue of Liberty was banned by the BBC because of the lyric, I sail beneath your skirt. And again, that whole song is full of double entendres about climbing your torso and sailing under your skirt and the subject of many dreams. It's such a very... You know, so some guy is fantasizing about being with the Statue of Liberty.
Well, you know, maybe she's got it.
She's hot.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that the toga really doesn't do much for her, but we don't know.
And she's all about fairness.
Yeah.
And freedom. You're also going to hear on that album the most XTC cover of All Along the Watchtower you're ever going to hear. It's as different to the original by Bob Dylan as Jimi Hendrix's was at the time. Like, it is a stark contrast to the original. It's one of my favorite things by them, but it did not make it into my playlist, surprisingly.
Because someone else picked it.
Oh, you did? I didn't even realize you did. That's really funny. Oh, you did? You know what? I didn't recognize it because you didn't put the full title. That's hilarious.
I didn't realize I was using subterfuge.
Yeah, you totally were. You didn't even know it. It's like I looked at that and I was like, oh, I'm not familiar with a song called Watchtower. Cool. The band went on tour after that for the next 5 years. Later that same year, again, we're going back to these albums in the 70s where bands were releasing albums twice a year.
Well, and that's something I want to point out is they were releasing music in the late 70s that did not sound very much like late 70s music. They had already moved into what the 80s were going to start to sound like. So they were way ahead of the curve. At least that's the way I picked up.
I'm going to keep bringing up Elvis Costello and Joe Jackson, but The Clash also. There was this pre-New Wave sound, not quite punk, not quite New Wave, but it's this jangly guitars, really, really heavy drums that these guys seem to fall into as well. And it's a late 70s sound, but only a late 70s sound for a very specific group of, of artists, who almost all of which just sailed right into the world of New Wave very easily because they'd kind of laid the groundwork for it.
Yep.
They followed up White Music with Go 2. This was more experimental album than the first one was. This one peaked on the UK charts at number 21 and has an album cover that is just a wall of text, a wall of white typewriter text on a black background. Looks like a Chuck Lorre title card. One member, Barry Andrews, left while the band was on tour in the U.S. He would later form the League of Gentlemen, not extraordinary though, with Robert Fripp from King Crimson.
Now that's extraordinary.
That is extraordinary. I wonder if this was the U.S. tour that kind of was the last U.S. tour for the band. Andy Partridge has crippling stage fright. It was during a tour in the U.S. where he just collapsed. I don't know if you've actually got this later on. Never mind. I guess we'll get to that in 1982.
I do want to talk about, though, the fact that they did that entire tour on a school bus.
Oh, really?
With their mom and all their family.
That's crazy. That's nuts. Really? So it took their family?
The Partridge family.
Oh, okay. Andy Partridge. I get you. Oh, the daddiest of dad jokes. It's right there. In 1979, they released the album Drums and Wires. The name came from the album's emphasis on guitars and expansive drums. This album also showed a huge growth in songwriting ability. It's way more pop-centered than the previous albums. It's also the first album to feature Dave Gregory on guitars, and it featured that signature gated reverb made famous by Steve Lillywhite. The lead single from this album was Making Plans for Nigel. Reached number 34 in the UK and only number 176 on the US top 200. Once you got to that song, did you recognize it? Like, okay, I know this this XTC song.
So Making Plans for Nigel is one of those songs that kind of existed in the background a lot, but I never put XTC with Making Plans for Nigel. It wasn't until this one this listen through that I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But it was, I didn't have the consciousness to connect the two until this listen through.
Interesting. All right. Well, you know what? That's that totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. In 1980, they released Takeaway / The Lure of the Salvage. This is a record that contains dub versions of XTC tracks, and it was originally released by a quote-unquote Mr. Partridge. Also that same year, the big concert album, Urgh, A Music War, a soundtrack that included a live version of Respectable Street.
So how, wouldn't it have been really meta if they had actually covered a Partridge Family song?
It would have been very meta. You should have put that as your I wish they would cover. Is that actually like I could hear them doing I Think I Love You, honestly.
Yeah. Or the Let's Come On, Let's Get Happy.
Sure. Yeah, either one of those would have worked really well. Also, 12 Days of Christmas would be really good by them. In 1980, they released Black Sea. The singles were, I'm waiting for you to get that.
The 12 Days of Christmas. I missed it. I don't know the reference.
What's the first thing that my true love gave to
me? Oh, a partridge on a pear tree. There we go. Wow. See, and you can never make fun of me ever again.
Nope. I felt like the gates were open.
Yeah, no. So I mean, you know what? And that's a really good one because I was like, okay, 12, because maybe there's a cover that you knew. And I was giving you credit for information. No, you were swinging the same bat I was.
I did, but I only because I saw you do it first. In 1980, they released the album Black Sea. And the singles from this one were Generals and Majors, Towers of London, and Sergeant Rock is doing it. Sergeant Rock caused some controversy for the lyric "Keeper Stood in Line," and even Andy Partridge says that he kind of regrets that song because it was crass.
And it's weird because that comes up again too.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, there was you know, some definitely never felt like the band was misogynistic, but the characters, some of the characters that they created were not the they were deplorables. Let's just say it.
Well, and also, and it, again. Songs in context of time matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. Speaking of Respectable Street, it was also banned by the BBC for its references to abortion. But no comment about the sex positions that please best her boyfriend. This was their most successful album in the US. It reached number 41 on the album charts, and they went on tour opening for The Police. I would have loved to have seen that show.
And now listening to these guys, like when I wrote these notes and I hadn't listened to the catalog yet. Mm-hmm. And now having listened to it, that's like the dream bill.
Oh, it totally is. And it fits really well. It's the Police and XTC totally would be a good pairing. This actually, we'll talk about my favorite album, but Black Sea is easily my second favorite album by them and also still would be one of my favorite albums of all time by any band. Certainly in my top 20. Love that album. And I feel like it's a solid one from start to finish. In 1982, they released English Settlement. This was their first double album. And the lead single was Senses Working Overtime.
The hook was based on a Manfred Mann tune called 5-4-3-2-1 that actually came out in 1964.
I got to listen to that because, I mean, we all know the 1-2-3-4-5. So I got to hear the Manfred Mann tune that it's based on. It's great. Andy Partridge around this time described feeling nausea and stomach pains while on stage. He said, quote, "My body and brain said, you're hating this experience. I'm going to make it bad for you. When you go on stage, I'm going to give you panic attacks and stomach cramps. You're not enjoying this and you haven't got the heart to tell anyone you can't carry on. So I'm going to mess you up." This caused the cancellation of a large part of the European tour. And after a couple of dates in the U.S., that tour was canceled as well. Yeah, it was actually that U.S. tour that he collapsed on stage, passed out, and said, "That's it. I'm not performing live anymore." He just crippling stage fright. Wow. I get it. I mean, yeah. I don't get that degree, of course, but
no, that's the way I felt when I entered a math class.
Were you naked and there was a test that you had to prepare for though? With tours canceled, the band was in debt and unable to record new material.
It was during this time that they sued their manager for mishandling their finances. For the next 10 years, almost all of the band's earnings were dumped into legal fees.
Oh, that's a bummer. While Partridge was healing, he was working on healing, he started doing more writing.
He had developed an addiction of sorts to Valium, and it was during this time that he gave up the use of it.
The new material that he had written was rejected by Virgin Records. They were instructed to write something more like The Police. Oh, bummer. Maybe there's a drawback to opening for The Police that you start getting compared to him.
Be like Gordon. Be like Gordon.
Exactly. In 1983, they released Mummer. Virgin did very little to promote this album, but the one single, Love on a Farm Boy's Wages, did find a little bit of chart success. First of a few songs that reflected their financial stresses. That's for sure, yeah. And it's funny, that's a really common theme with them is the barely scraping by or, you know, the money being an issue. And I didn't realize that, but that certainly didn't make the connection that had to do with the them being broke at this time because of Virgin and that manager, that crappy manager. They released a Christmas single around this time called Thanks for Christmas under the name Three Wise Men. And it wouldn't be the first time, too, that they performed under a different name. 1984, they released The Big Express. This was a return to a brighter, more up-tempo sound. And there was a lot of studio experimentation, and the sound was way more full.
And this is when they released the video that they made for All You Pretty Girls.
It's a great song. Like a sea shanty. In 1985, they released the album 25 O'Clock, but not as XTC, as an alter ego band called the Dukes of Stratosphere. The spinoff group consisted of Partridge and Moulding, with Dave and his drummer brother Ian each adopted a pseudonym: Sir John Johns, the Red Curtain, Lord Cornelius Plum, and E.I.E.I. Owen. At the sessions, the band dressed themselves in paisley outfits and lit scented candles, really put them in the mood for that psychedelic rock of the sound. The album was first released on April 1st, 1985.
It sold twice as many copies as Big Express, even before it was discovered that XTC was behind it.
It's funny. It's positioned almost as like a, oh, check out this discovery by this band that is the psychedelic rock band that no one's ever heard of. And it kind of backfired on them as well, a little bit. Before the release...
It's kind of like how the fake band turned into a real thing with Porcupine Tree.
Yeah, right, exactly. Thank goodness it didn't happen with Chris Gaines. Before the next release of the next album, Virgin threatened to drop them if they didn't sell more than 70,000 copies. It was reported that they, quote, sounded too English. They do. They absolutely sound like an English band. What's wrong with that? In 1986, they released Skylarking. They were told that they had to work with an American producer, and they picked a guy named Todd Rundgren. And if you ask me, and you didn't, but I'm going to tell you anyway, this Skylarking is a perfect album from start to finish. This is all killer, no filler. Every song is great and fits so perfectly together. It's almost a concept album bookended by this nature, you know, this world of nature with breakups and strife and stuff like that in the middle of it. Really like that. There were reported powers between Todd Rundgren and Andy Partridge, though. And both guys are very, I don't know, controlling. They seem to be controlling figures, so that doesn't surprise me one bit. The songs Grass and Dear God were released as singles.
A fair amount of controversy. We've touched on this a little bit about the song Dear God. Nonetheless, the commercial success of Dear God propelled Skylarking to sell more than 250,000 units, and it raised the band's profile among American college youth.
It's a very, you know, it's a very different time, 1986, because you'd get, if you were to release a song like that now, it might not even be on the radar. But, you know, they had this, Joan Osborne had that One of Us, What If God Was One of Us song.
Yeah, but that was like 10 years later.
It was 10 years later, yeah, but still, I mean, it was, you know, it was still controversial for its time, but definitely declining in controversy as we got closer and closer to now.
And then we had the Counting Blue Cars with the having God being identified as a woman.
Oh, yeah. What if, yeah, right. Tell me all your thoughts on God, because I'd really like to meet her. Yeah, what other, didn't Madonna have, she had controversy with that,
Anything she's ever done?
Like a Prayer. Well, Like a Prayer was the big,
yes. Yeah,
just about anything she's done. But Like a Prayer was the big one. The church kind of coming down on her hard for that one.
Yeah. That and Pepsi.
Right. That's right. They broke their contract with her for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not surprising. XTC and Virgin Records and Rundgren created three different mix downs of the album. The first lacked in dynamics. The second was rejected for numerous pops, clicks, and dropouts. And the third had no bass and seemed thin and sounded muddy. Years later, it was discovered that the masters were done with improper sound polarity. And this ended up being easily their best known album. I've got the 5-1 special edition Blu-ray deal of this one because it's so good.
See,
and it's one that...
I was going to say, now you sound like me talking about 5.1 mixes.
I know, it totally does. And it's the only one I own. And if I was going to own it for any album, you know, this is the one to own it for me. In 1987, they released Psionic Sunspot back to the Dukes of Stratosphere. Again, it sold really well, beating the sales of Skylarking, which makes me sad. Partridge was upset also that people liked these personas more than their actual personas.
It's because these guys are more fun. I mean, clearly they're more fun.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Okay, they're musically more fun.
They're musically more fun. I mean, it's like Jellyfish. It's like that, you know, that psychedelic. It's the novelty of psychedelic music in the 80s when we'd gotten away from that.
Yeah.
Before there was a Flaming Lips or before there were other bands like that. Also, that same year, they basically collected the two albums, 25 O'Clock and Psionic Sunspot, put them together on one album called Chips from the Chocolate Fireball. That actually is the one that I know. In 1989, they released Oranges and Lemons. This was recorded in L.A. with Paul Fox.
Pat Mostatello from Mr. Mister and King Crimson were the drummer on this album.
This album is seen as the late 80s vision of 60s psychedelia. So they're kind of absorbing that Duke's persona, but putting it as an XTC product now. And for me, I considered this the follow-up, even though Psionic Sunspot came out between the two. This is, for me, the solid follow-up to Skylarking. Such a great pairing of albums. Mayor of Simpleton was the lead single, followed by King for a Day and The Loving. And it's funny, you look at the first few tracks from that album, and it's a lot of, authority figures, right? It's Mayor of Simpleton, King for a Day, and President Killigan are the first three songs from that album. You get presidents, kings, and mayors, and then you start getting into the other the other songs. Did realize The Loving was a single. Oh well. They embarked on a brief acoustic tour inspired by the MTV Unplugged trend. In 1990, they released Rag & Bone Buffet. This was like B-sides, BBC sessions, other soundtrack contributions. In 1992, BBC Radio 1, Live in Concert, followed by 1994's Drum and Wireless BBC Radio Sessions. 1995, a tribute to XTC came out called A Testimonial Dinner, The Songs of XTC. It's a really good tribute album. A Crash Test Dummies, cover of All You Pretty Girls on there.
Did he hum through all that one?
No, he actually sang the words. Parthenon Huxley, Freddie Johnson. It's great. Great tribute. 1990, and I think, I want to say that XTC appears on their own tribute album. They do a song called The Good Things as Terry and the Love Men, but it's really XTC, again, taking a different persona and appearing and doing a cover of a song on a cover, on a tribute album.
That's weird. It's funny, but it's weird.
It's an XTC thing to do though, right?
It is. It's very much an XTC thing to do.
Yeah. Talk about, like, you look at the lineup and it's Freddie Johnson, Crash Test Dummies, Sarah McLachlan, the Rembrandts. I mean, it is a slice of 1990 right there and there.
Yeah.
They Might Be Giants do a cover of Dukes of Stratosphere's 25 O'Clock. It's great. Space Hog. When was the last time you thought of Space Hog?
Good grief. I forgot all about Space Hog.
Exactly. They do a cover on there as well. 1998, Transistor Blast, The Best of the BBC Sessions, a four-disc box set, collecting a lot of recordings that they did on the BBC, new stuff and old stuff. So like Another Satellite from Skylarking is on there. So it's not just old. I looked online and it's a bummer. $65 to get a used copy of that.
So when is your showing up?
Yeah, I couldn't do it. If it was 30 or less, I would have done it, but I can't. It's a four disc set. I mean, I can justify $30 for that because it's, you know, it's not studio recordings, it's radio recordings. So it's not going to be as high a quality, but yeah, I can't justify $65. And then 1999, they released Homespun, which was the demo album. A lot of early demo tracks and alternate versions of songs that you know better in other versions. Jack and Jillian years ago, some dinosaur dropped the pail when it saw our reflection. Don't you know we're all light? Yeah, I read that someplace. Don't you know? In the late to mid 1990s, XTC were free from financial debt, finally, from Virgin after making, quote, some heavy concessions. In 1992, they released the album Nonesuch. This was received with critical acclaim in April 1992 when it came out. It was their second top 40 album in the UK.
And one reviewer said this was the alternative music for those that don't like alternative music. Watch out.
What a music reviewer thing to say.
Especially in 1992.
Yes, right, exactly. Singles from this album were The Disappointed and The Ballad of Peter Pumpkinhead.
That's another one I knew. I didn't know it was them.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll talk about that in a second as well. Wrapped in Gray was set to be the third single and about 5,000 copies have been pressed, but at the last moment, it was pulled. Right around this time, Dumb and Dumber came out and gave us a Crash Test Dummies cover of The Ballad of Peter Pumpkinhead that became actually a big single for Crash Test Dummies. In 2001, Homegrown came out
Homespun. What? Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought never mind. Okay.
Nope. It's the second album.
Okay.
Homespun and Homegrown.
I actually think I stumbled on that when I was doing the notes the first time and I stumbled on it again now.
Quite all right. Also in 1999, they released Apple Venus Volume 1. This is the first album released on their own label. It was originally planned to be a double album, but they didn't have enough money to finish it.
This album was listed in the 1001 albums you need to listen to before you die, which is weird because I would have figured Skylarking would have made the list before this one did.
I agree. Yeah, it's good, but it's no Skylarking. They followed that up in 2000 with Wasp Star. This is really Apple Venus Volume 2. In contrast to the first volume, this one was way more guitar-centered. And this is seen as one of the band's weakest albums. So this is probably one of the 1001 albums to avoid before you die.
1001 albums you can skip. It's okay.
Right. In 2002, they released Coat of Many Cupboards. This is a box set. And in 2005, Apple Box, a box set that has Apple Venus 1 and 2, as well as both Homespun and Homegrown. So lots of alternate tracks and deep cuts and stuff like that. In 2006, they started releasing the Fuzzy Warbles, Volume 1 through 8, and Hinges collections. Fuzzy Warbles is a collection of demos and sketches from Andy Partridge's tape archive. They don't include any of Colin Moulding's songs, and they're produced and compiled by Andy Partridge himself. The name was probably inspired by a line from A Clockwork Orange when Alex asks a girl in a record shop if he has anything at home to play her, quote, fuzzy warbles on. Instead, he invites her to his house where he has a premium quality sound system installed and sex shenanigans ensue. It's true. Tell me about their statistics and general notes, Hannah.
All right. So I pulled this quote from AllMusic because it kind of sums up the way I see him and actually the way many people see him. So I just pulled this quote because it kind of fits. Ecstasy was one of the smartest, catchiest British pop bands to emerge from the punk and new wave explosion of the 70s. While popular success has eluded them in both Britain and America, the group has developed a devoted cult following in both countries that remains loyal over two decades after their first records. Ecstasy's lack of commercial success isn't because their music isn't accessible. Their bright, occasionally melancholy melodies flow with more grace than most bands. It has more to do with the group consistently being out of step with the times. However, the band has left behind a remarkably rich and varied series of albums that make a convincing argument that Ecstasy is a great lost pop band.
Yeah, they put it very well. They're almost too smart for their own good. You know, it makes them inaccessible for some people who don't listen carefully to the lyrics or pay attention to that sort of thing and don't see the cleverness underneath them.
So what I was thinking as I was reading this and as I was listening is if you'd shifted the band 5 to 7 years in one direction or the other, do you think it would have helped them line up better?
It would have to be later. I mean, they had such a long career anyway, right? Like 30 years.
No, I'm just thinking if you move them 5 years up, so they were releasing everything from like the early 80s on, if that would line them up more with what they were actually doing.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, a Black Sea coming out 5 years later probably would have gotten a lot bigger and could have been their synchronicity or their Zenyatta Mandata, you know?
Yeah. And I think that Dear God might not have gotten the negative press if it was released up against the Joan Osbornes.
In the early 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because it's funny, if you were to ask me Oranges and Lemons, what decade that came out in, even though it's right on the cusp of the 90s, I would have said, oh yeah, that's firmly planted in the 90s.
Yeah.
Even though I was at the record store the day it came out buying it, but for whatever reason, I connect that with a 90s album more than I do a late 80s album.
Yeah, so I'm thinking maybe if they, I mean, like they said, they were too smart for their own good and always kind of out of step. And if they'd been...
Yeah.
5 years later, maybe they would be more in step and everyone would be more XTC-centric.
It's funny because I've always called them XTC. I mean, I know it is a play on ecstasy, but it's funny to hear someone call them ecstasy, even though I think that they...
Well, there's no punctuation, so it's just all run together.
Ecstasy. All right. Well, let's say that you did get to see XTC back in concert back in the day. What song were you guaranteed you were going to hear when you saw them perform?
All right. I made a short list based on my information. So yeah. I put Dear God, Peter Pumpkinhead, and Making Plans for Nigel. Those are the three.
And I'd add Senses Working Overtime. Oh man, there was a couple other ones that it was like, oh yeah, since Working Overtime is huge. Generals and Majors was a pretty big hit for them. I wouldn't put Love on a Strauss Farm Boy's Wages in there either, but that's probably where I'd go.
But you're working with a far more head full of information than I was.
Of course. Let's see what the stats say. It's all about the numbers, Hammond. It doesn't matter what we say. This is pop, actually, their biggest, most performed song in concert. Followed by Making Plans for Nigel, then Life Begins at the Hop, Statue of Liberty, Battery Brides, Are You Receiving Me, Outside World, The Crowded Room, The Rhythm, Dance Band, Radios in Motion. A lot of this has to do with the fact that they didn't really do a lot of touring for Skylarking or, you know, Oranges and Lemons or things like that. So it's skewed differently.
But still, I just kind of went with what my assumptions were.
Yep. Anything from Black Sea doesn't start until 28, it looks like. With Respectable Street, Towers of London, Generals and Majors, Living Through Another Cuba, Love It. Yeah, I mean, it's almost like it all hits right there. Like they only did 20 tours after Black Sea was released.
It's interesting thinking of them more as after the stage fright stuff, as a more of a studio band, like Alan Parsons Project, isn't really known for touring, but what they do in the studio is freaking amazing.
Yeah, for sure. And Dear God doesn't even appear on the list until 54. It's their 54th most common song performed in concert. And again, a big part of that obviously is the stage fright and the lack of touring after that album, but still.
But also it's hard to drag along a bunch of kids to, you know, sing about God.
That's right. They could probably just get the We Don't Need No Education kids.
Oh, yeah. They're always ready to sing.
Or the kids of those kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's cool. I kind of want to see, let's see, 1992. Is there a set list? Oh, bummer. I was hoping there'd be one of these would have a cool set list. Yeah, and a lot of these, you look at this, is XTC on Late Night with David Letterman. They did King for a Day. BBC Radio 1 Studios, Q107 Toronto, Canada. Like these appearances aren't concerts. They are
appearances.
Radio studio appearances, all the 1989 stuff. So where you're hearing them perform their Skylarking and their Nonesuch and stuff like that, it's all, there it is. It's called the Acoustic Radio Tour of 1989.
The album cover that has the kind of the stylized face and the blue letters and the that's an album cover that I saw all over the place when I was in college. Yeah. I could not go anywhere and not see that album art. I never owned the album, but I sure know that album art.
And it's so clever because it's XTC and you add some color and some different things to it and it makes a person's face.
Yeah. It's a very well done piece of art. But really I vividly remember seeing that everywhere I went.
I want to say that was done by Hypnosis, which was the UK design group that did every Pink Floyd album cover, like The Wish You Were Here, Guy on Fire, Shaking Hands. Mm-hmm. And Houses of Holy by Led Zeppelin was done by them as well. I want to say that was a Hypnosis. Man, Hypnosis was creating all the album covers back then.
Yeah.
Might have to think about that as a guess the connection topic.
Ooh, that'd be fun. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it would be. That'd be a great one. I'll cut that out because I don't want to give it away. But man,
now
that
if
is
I awesome. Do it this Friday, then this there's no way this episode would come out.
Yeah. To spoil it.
All right. Well, let's we talked a little bit about covers. Who would we like to hear them cover? Who would we like to hear XTC cover? Okay,
before you even start, I'm gonna throw a flag on yours because that's not even a good song.
Shut up, of course it is. Flag on the play. Overruled. And I know why. I know. I think I have a sneaking suspicion why you don't like it.
You
do. It has nothing to do with the sun.
It has to do with my neighbors.
It has to do with your neighbors, exactly. The song is Stacy's Mom by Fountains of Wayne. And Inside Baseball, Heaven's Wife's name is Stacy. And you for sure don't think that Stacy's mom has got it going on. But no, I think that this song, and I love Fountains of Wayne, and they've got that same kind of cheeky style as XTC, or had. I mean, we lost Adam Schlesinger last year, which is a tragic loss. Stacy's mom has got that. It's very self-deprecating. It's diluted. A lot of XTC's characters in their songs. Mayor of Simpleton is a diluted, you know, not diluted, but deluded individual. President Killigan, you know, characters like this. And the main character of Stacy's mom feels like he's, you know, he's got an in with this MILF. It's just not going to happen. And it's got a killer hook, plus the potential for great harmonies, which XTC did in some of their later stuff, especially after the Dukes of Stratosphere thing.
I think it's interesting that you picked from a song leaning more to their earlier career. And I was very specifically thinking of their later career when I made my pick.
Yes, yes and no. I think I was thinking mid-career first for them covering Stacy's Mom. Like, I could see them doing it around the Nonesuch and Oranges and Lemons period.
Okay, all right. Because I was thinking it'd be in that go-to era.
Oh, God. No, that's a little too wacky, out there kind of sound. I think
okay.
That wouldn't work for that. How about you? What have you got?
So I picked a song that was way more mellow, way more thoughtful, way more peaceful. Basically, it's a piano and a voice and maybe some atmosphere behind it. And I picked Wait for Sleep by Dream Theater. It's a short song. It's simple. But I really think they could easily do something very very excessive to it.
How short is it?
Like, for a Dream Theater like song? Less than 3 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, really is that?
Jeez. Yeah, it's super short.
Wow.
You thought I was going to go for the joke that it was like, oh, it's 17 and a half minutes.
Nope. Really short song. It's 17
no,
minutes.
No, it's a blip on their radar musically at like just under 3 minutes, I think.
Oh, that's crazy. Okay. Yeah, that does surprise me a lot. Huh.
But it cool. I feel like they could take that thoughtfulness and that peacefulness and do something really pretty creative with it.
Yeah. I don't know the song, but I like the well, description.
If you have 2 minutes and 34 seconds to kill.
I'll do that after we record. I'll totally do that. All right, let's get to our playlist. This is where we take five songs that aren't on one of their many greatest hits. They have a lot of greatest hits albums. And we couple that with our choices to kind of give you the full rounded experience of XTC and their great music.
And before you get started, your first one and your reasoning, I added that whole thing to the playlist on Spotify.
Oh, you rock. Thank you. Well, good. The people are in for a treat. Yeah. Song number one for me is Earn Enough for Us. I don't know if this is a hit or not. It feels like it probably did get some radio play. So maybe it was a single. This is from Skylarking, but really, if I could, I would have picked the entire Skylarking album. Like I said, it's a perfect album, start to finish. And to just pick one song from there when you've got It's Really Super, Supergirl, and Another Satellite, and Grass, and Summer's Cauldron, and A Thousand Umbrellas. I mean, it's a great album.
And so what I did was I put the entire thing on there on the Spotify playlist. And I highly recommend people listen to it in order because the track order of that album actually is what makes it magical because all the songs are great individually. But when they're crammed up against each other and the track order is listened to on top of just musical, the track order is actually what makes it magical. Because if they're out of order, it might not have the same effect.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I've done is when I imported it into my own library, I made sure that certain songs were imported as one track as opposed to being imported as individual mm-hmm. tracks, because I don't want them coming up as in shuffle. It's kind of like We Are the Champions, We Will Rock You, or the last half of Abbey Road. You don't want Carry That Weight appearing on its own in a shuffle.
No. It's kind of like Sirius and Eye in the Sky. If they come up separately, all it's going to do is piss you off.
Exactly. I mean, Eye in the Sky, I guess you could hear that one on its own. But if you hear Sirius and it's not followed by Eye in the Sky...
Or a Michael Jordan introduction.
All right, so Skylarking, but Earn Enough for Us is the highlight for me on that album. Second one is the Dukes of Stratosphere song, You're a Good Man, Albert Brown. The rest of the Duke stuff is perfectly suited to the psychedelic vibe that they're going for. But this one feels out of place, and I love it for that. It's like an old pub sing-along. And you can imagine this guy named Albert Brown, who was wounded in the war, and he married a woman, a nurse, whose name was Else. And it just feels like you're going to sing this over a pint of lager in the pub down the street. 10 Feet Tall is my next track. Drums and Wires is the album that that one's from. Happy, I'm floating around on my feet now. You make me go dizzy. I'm weak at the knees. Yes, I feel like I'm walking right at 10 feet tall. I feel like I'm walking right at 10 feet tall. Well, you say I'm faking, and I say, don't worry. It's got a guitar melody that kind of weaves in and around itself. Folds over. I really like that. And if you're going to find a song of theirs that feels like it's a Joe Jackson or Elvis Costello song, that's the one you're going to settle on, is 10 Feet Tall. The Loving, which I guess was a single from Oranges and Lemons. That was my wrist getting slapped. Listen, if the last song was Elvis Costello, this one is absolutely The Beatles. I have no doubt that The Beatles were an influence on XTC, and this song is just kind of the proof. It's the example that I show to the jury. Ladies and gentlemen, the jury, I present The Loving. Come on, I implore you. Number five is that opening track, that controversial opening track of Black Sea, Respectable Street. Now they talk about devotions in cosmopolitan proportions to their quarters. As they speak of contraception. Number one, it's a great way to begin an album, right? It starts out with this gentle sing thing, and then the drums kick in, and it just goes right into it. And it's what people use Next Door for now, is bitching about their neighbors and kind of that whole, like, the Gladys Kravitz thing of peeking out your windows and complaining about what the neighbors are doing. And, Chad, what are they doing? This is a respectable street.
You know, it's funny. If the Desperate Housewives people had any brains, they would use that as a theme song.
They should have. They, you know, missed opportunity, Desperate Housewives. This could have been Wisteria Lane.
Yep.
Is a respectable street. All right, what have you got?
All right, so my first one I picked on the DL with All Along the Watchtower.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said, I put my note, said, yep, I picked it first. This is an amazing reimagining of this song. It's funky, it's bluesy. And as Brian said, it's as different from Bob Dylan as Hendrix is to Bob Dylan. And it's just on the other end of the spectrum. And there's this really, really cool ragged harmonica playing throughout the parts of the song. And it also just adds a whole different personality that you're like, oh, these guys have that too. Mm-hmm. And it's like the only time you ever heard that on any of their songs. But when they pulled it out, it really did make a stance and kind of a signature moment for that piece of music. My next one was Sergeant Rock. It's not about the comic book character, which when I first saw it, I'm like, these guys are pop culture guys. They're going to mention that, especially being British. They're going to poke fun at the American symbolism for stuff. And they didn't. It's about how the singer sees dating and relationships more like a battle than a war. I'm not sure how appropriate the lyrics are now. I mean, last week, Brian had Freeway, which had its moments of question.
It did, yes. A little misogynistic or
but maybe. But I gotta tell you, this is a damn catchy song. Mm-hmm. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it wasn't until I looked at the lyrics that I felt a little guilty for picking it. But then again, I put the song in context of time and I'm like, okay, once upon a time, this wasn't so bad. I could never get away with playing it now and saying, this is my favorite song in the world. But
right,
it is a very good ecstasy song. The next one I picked was Jason and the Argonauts, and that's from English Settlement. This is like some sort of quest for happiness. And he uses the idea of Jason and the Argonauts as the way he kind of tells his tale and draws the parallels. This is a really good song. And it kind of goes back to what Brian said earlier about their lyrics and just how smart and windy and twisty they can be. Because on the first listen, I'm like, okay, I got it. I listen to it again. And all of a sudden I'm like, well, maybe I don't got it. And right. I went back and forth, and I got to tell you, this is a really smart song. Then I picked their instrumental. Called Frost Circus, and it's from Murmur. And I put for my notes is this is awesomely creepy. This is such a cool piece of music. And I'm glad I get to write the notes first because I think Ryan might have picked this one because it's really good.
No, I like it, but I wouldn't have picked it. Mummer, by the way.
Oh, Mummer, sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah. All right, my last...
Was it R.E.M. that had an album, Mummer? I think the R.E.M. had Mummer.
I think Mummer, yeah, Mummer. Maybe Heart had a Mummer.
Now, see, there's a good one right there. There's a good dad joke. Rose above.
I'm like a home run hitter, Brian. I will swing that anything comes across the plate. Sometimes
even a broken clock is right twice a day or once a day, depending on if it's in 24 hours.
All right. My last one was King for the Day from Oranges. I really like this one. It sounded great. I love the voices. It sounds like this really could be, Brian mentioned a couple other bands, but this sounds like it could be a Crowded House tune, like hands down. Yeah. I heard Crowded House when I first heard this. So I really liked it. And I came out of this week kind of a fan. I don't know if I'm Brian type fan, but if someone said, hey, let's put this on, I'm not going to fight with them.
Listen, it would be hard to be a Brian type fan because I'm such a huge fan of XTC, but you know, the fact that you like him more coming out of it than you did going in is good enough for me. I'll take it.
Yeah, no, this was a kind of a big win for me.
Well, good. That's XTC. That wraps things up for that. Let's talk about next week. Oh boy, this is one that I'm I'm interested. I'm like, I can't wait for this, but I'm like, am I going to like it? Am I going to hate it? Mama said that we'd be knocked out by listening to LL Cool J for a week. So that's what we're going to be doing. Of course, that song and I Need Love. And I think those are the only two songs of his that I'm
going back to Cali.
Oh, going back to Cali, of course. How could I forget? And all the stuff he did for the Toys soundtrack, his acting skills as well. So that'll be interesting. LL Cool J. Ladies love Cool James. That's what that stands for. It's the only other bit of trivia I know about him. Anyway, that's going to be next week. In the meantime, we want to hear from you. Email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at The Soundography. Of course, our website is soundography.com. Every episode is there, complete with links to the Spotify playlist, a link to where you can buy the songs. There's so many XTC greatest hits albums. It'll be easy for me to just pick one of those. I think there's one that's a double disc set that's really good. So look for that. And of course, a way to support the show is Patreon. If you want to support us and what we're doing here and even help choose subjects, I don't mention this enough, but if you pick one of the certain levels, you can help pick a subject for our show, and we'll even have you on as a guest to talk about why you picked it. Visit patreon.com/soundography to find out more about that. Plus, you get all sorts of great bonus stuff, outtakes, and bonus shows where we review movies that have a music focus to them.
We got to do that soon.
We do. I think we're coming up on this weekend or the next weekend to do that. So we better do that. Of course, we love to get your reviews. If you've got a good review, post it where everyone can see it. And that's places like iTunes and Stitcher and Spreaker and places like that. We'd love to hear what you've got to say. And it's a great way for other people to discover the show. So keep that up. Hammond, anything to say to close this out?
No, I just can't live without my radio.
That's a LL Cool J thing. I know that one. Yeah. Excellent. Well, that's coming up next week. Until then, this is Brian Ibbett and Hammond Chamberlain saying we'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.